Wait, did you hear?
No.
We're diving into the juiciest celebrity profiles of all time.
I'm Beatrice Hazelhurst.
And I'm Ivana Ryder.
This is Uncover Girl.
Oh, it's good to see you.
Oh my God. Beatrice has been traveling.
Oh, I've been abroad.
Back home, abroad.
I've been abroad. I emceed a wedding.
I think you need to explain a little bit what that is, because that's an American audience doesn't understand.
Well, I also don't think I really understood. It's a big job. I thought it was introducing the speakers at a wedding a la an award ceremony host. That's really what I thought. I thought it was like you get up, you do a brief intro, and then you say, here is Mr. Marcus.
Yeah.
And it's not that. It is keeping the show on the road. It's keeping that thing on track, like handing out the petals, directing people to photos, announcing
the petals. What are the petals?
What do you mean with the petals? From the roses.
From the rose. Oh, the petals.
To
petals.
Throw.
To throw. To throw.
Oh my God. That really stumped you.
I'm so sorry.
No pun intended.
I've seen rice. So true. I've seen rice. I mean, but of course, petals are beautiful.
Throw the petals.
Throw the petals. Oh my God, it's so stunning.
Yeah. So there's a lot. You know, you announce the cocktail hour, you announce everything. And what was so crazy about it was that everyone came up to me throughout the course and went, I just heard, are you the MC tonight? Like that is what it was. I've never felt a celebrity status like that. And I mean, I have another inspiration for today, but this was truly inspiring. A girl came up to me at the end of the night and said, I've been to a lot of weddings. I've seen a lot of MCs. And I just have to tell you that I have never seen a woman host alone. I've never seen a woman MC by herself. I have seen a man and a woman. I have seen two men. I have seen obviously so many solo men. I've never seen a female MC.
Stop you shattering the glass ceiling.
You could not. And this was at the end of the night. This was at 12. The wedding was shutting down.
Wow.
It was a roast for me. I roasted every single person up there.
That's good. And I forget a good roast, what a good roast can do. It makes everyone in the room feel closer to each other.
That's true. It's unifying.
It's like everyone's flaws are laid bare.
I heard a great take on a roast, I think, from Nikki Glaser, where she said, only a truly insecure person can roast others because they can see the insecurities in others. And I think that's so true.
Ooh.
Like the jock, the high school jock and the prom queen aren't going to deliver a sickening joke. They aren't going to be able to decapitate you because they've never felt crippling insecurity. Yeah. Only the person that sees you and knows you and has felt it is going to be able to take you down.
Yeah. And who's watching even when you think no one's watching.
Exactly.
That's really the panic. I know. And I know you've seen that when you've seen my mask drop when I'm smiling at someone and then I turn away. But you remain focused to watch my smile drop immediately.
Well, baby girl, it just slipped. Jim Carrey. The mask is slipping.
The mask slipped right off. Slid off my oily nose right onto the floor.
You do it like no one else.
Thank
to see you work a room, to see you on a phone call. It's unbelievable.
Oh my God, thank you. I mean, I feel the same way about you. And we often do it together. I think it's so many of our earliest memories are, you know, both of us clown noses on, cartwheeling off of each other's backs.
The difference between you and I, though, I find is you can have the most like extraordinary conversations where people come away feeling so like loved and warm and uplifted. And being at this wedding really reminded me of kind of like the effect I have on people in kind of the opposite way, where a girl came up to me and I mean, I don't think anyone listens to this. God knows she doesn't. I'm sure she doesn't. But she came up to me and was like, my husband's here. And I said, oh my God, your husband's here. Would I have met him? And she goes, well, he's here, but we're actually like not together right now. And I said, and that's probably when most people would be like, oh my God, I'm so sorry to hear that. So like, how do you know the bride? Mm-hmm. I instead went, oh my God, no. Recently, what happened?
What happened?
Yeah. Let's get into it.
Yeah.
We've got 45 minutes to love my next announcement. I've got time to burn. And I found out what, she was like, there's been infidelity.
Oh.
I said, did you discover it or did did he reveal it? And she said, I found it out and it's been, this is like the fourth time or something. And we're working through it and it's really hard that he's here and blah, blah, blah. And it was like a whole revelation.
Did you see him? Did you?
Yeah, I actually interacted with him prior to her. I was like, what's his name? And she was like, it's this person. I went, oh my God, we just had a full conversation because he was one of them who went, you're the MC. You're the MC. That's so interesting. That's a big job. Huge job tonight. I've done it. I've done it. And I know. Huge job. And I was like,
yes,
I've
indeed.
Become aware.
Yeah.
I've been made aware, Papa. But wow, I'm deep in this. And
yeah.
I don't know this woman very well. In fact, at all. Couldn't tell you her last name. But God, do I know her marital status inside and out.
But I have a counterpoint there.
Okay, tell me.
Which is that I've heard other people, I've never felt this personally, but I've heard other people walk away from gatherings and have felt like, oh my God, I shared too much.
Yes.
Like I told that person way too much.
And that's honestly always me too. I always feel like I overshared.
But there's something deeply comforting knowing that who is on the other end of that interaction is you. No one more well suited to receive an overshare than you.
Totally. The person that's going to go and talk about it on the podcast.
Oh my God. You're the villain in someone's story.
I'm the villain.
You're the villain.
It was like a unique scenario, this wedding where all the bride's bridal party were my high school friends. And she married someone who was friends with all my university friends. So it was two parts of my life converging.
Whoa.
And it was so strange. We had to kind of interact as adults and it was bizarre, Ivana.
How did you do, I'm wondering, at birthday parties? Like, were you good at mixing together friend groups as a child? Where you're like invited
no.
your friends to
and
a
I'm,
birthday
and
party?
And you know I'm never good at a birthday. I'm terrible at my own birthday.
It's okay. It's okay.
God. I'm such a one-on-one person.
Yeah.
I'm not a group dynamic person. That's why I think I fear my own wedding so much.
Yeah.
It's a constant source of terror in my life. That one day I will have to throw a party of this magnitude.
And everyone from all phases of life will
want a piece of you.
Yeah, of course. And there are all these things that you can't control. Like you can't really even control how you're coming across. So much of what's happening at a wedding is like what people think should happen at a wedding. Where it's like, I want to help. I want to talk to the bride. I'm afraid to talk to the bride. Like, you know, I'm introducing myself to the parents. Or is that too much? Or like whatever it is. Like it's people panic.
It brings out such an interesting side in everyone.
Yeah.
Different expectations. Yeah, it's just, I mean, we've talked about this ad nauseum, but
I know.
It's fascinating, these dynamics.
It is.
I was actually really surprised at this wedding specifically that there were so few people in my age group that didn't have children and weren't married. I was like, oh my God, how refreshing.
Yeah.
To not feel like, oh my God, the clock is ticking. Those ovaries are drying up by the minute.
God, I can't with the ovary drying up conversations.
I know.
The geriatric pregnancy of it all. It's just, it's too much. The weight of the world, we can't hold it for long.
Yeah, there was something about turning 30 that I was so excited for. And then, I don't know, I was having this conversation last night. My friend was like, I became so aware of my age at 28.
Mm.
And I was like, yeah, I really thought I would turn 30 and be like, God, I'm a spring chicken. But actually the opposite happened, which is so funny because I know that I'll look back on these years and be like, LOL.
Couldn't have been younger.
Was marinating in the womb at that point in time.
Yeah. What's inspiring you though?
Oh my God.
Tell me now.
Okay. I landed back from New Zealand and had a friend in town from New York and I hadn't seen him in a couple of years. And he was like, hey, I'm here for a couple of days. I know you're just back in town, but do you have time? Can I see you? And I said, yes, let's go for lunch. While I was with him, I was excited. I was like, you're looking beautiful in the Los Angeles sun. Can I take a photo of you? He said, of course. I kind of creative directed him. I was like, look into the light, turn to the side, smile, don't smile.
Yeah.
Sunglasses on. I took this photo. I posted it. My God, the response I got, Ivana. First of all, shouldn't have made the caption that. I made the caption, back with my man. Now, I assume at this point in time that everyone knows I have been in a long relationship and there's been no evidence of like a breakup, you know, a scrubbing of the photos,
which I look for and I yearn for.
I'm so excited.
Nothing like it in the world.
I hate when they don't reveal after the scrub what's gone down. It's like you can't just scrub and dub.
But for a regular person, it's like, what, the notes app?
Yeah,
like,
totally.
Me and Ryland are no longer, you know, coupled at this time, but we have love and respect for one another.
I honestly would kill the Notes app.
I know. It's true. We should all be doing Notes app way more.
For sure. Everything. I got a new job.
Yeah. I blacked out last night.
I'm moving to South Carolina.
Yeah. On the Notes app. South Carolina.
I want to know. I don't want the photo of you holding the house keys in front of the for sale sign. I want the Notes app. It's
been done. The house key photo has been done.
Put it in writing.
Yeah.
And then I'm going to really invest.
Yeah.
So anyway, take this photo of this man. And pretty much immediately, I'm getting a lot of unfollows. And then I realized, oh my God, that will be guys. Because sometimes guys follow me without realizing that there's a man in the mix.
Yeah.
But here I am declaring my friend Toby as my man.
Your man.
My man. Outside of that, I'm also getting a lot of activity, more DMs than ever. Definitely more DMs than usual. All women.
Yeah.
This man, to me, is clearly gay. And then I think, perhaps it's not so clear.
Mm-hmm.
Because these girls are saying, oh my God, so hot. Who is this? Oh my God, guys in LA are so hot. Is this guy single? It's a barrage.
Oh my God.
And I'm going, this is not right. So
matchmaker.
So I text him and I say, you've got two choices here. I can't take this anymore.
Mm-hmm.
I can't reply to all of these people. I'm a celebrity.
I can't. I'm so busy.
I don't have a social team. I frankly can't keep up. I either delete this photo of you all together or I post a photo and I say, this man is gay. Gentlemen this way.
Mm-hmm.
Ladies
fall behind.
And he says, I think say that. I think that's funny. I think do it. Mm-hmm. I'm like, okay, I'll do it. So I post.
You outing him.
Yeah, I out him. Yeah. Without his permission.
Without his permission.
So I post a follow-up and I say, regarding my previous story,
yeah,
the man in question is gay. Men only.
So final. Men yeah, only.
I know.
So
men,
final.
Men, I
so
know.
Many hearts broken in one instant.
I know. And I know that, you know, sexuality is a spectrum, but for many it isn't.
Yeah.
For many it's 99-1.
Yeah.
You know, on the Kinsey.
Yeah.
Just
that's it.
They don't want to see a lotus flower,
and they don't have to, and that's the beauty of it.
Did that make you squeamish?
Yeah,
was
for a moment, yeah, I just went, you know,
a yoni. Yonsei.
Yoni is tough for me. I don't love. And I'm comfortable with my body, but I'm not comfortable with my yoni.
Yoni.
With yoni.
Don't say my yoni.
Yeah,
please.
My yoni specifically.
So
wait, have you ever heard? I had a friend who worked at the Goop store, and people kept coming in asking for pussy eggs.
I just looked at the camera.
Like, do you have? Yeah, I'm sure you did.
I just broke the fourth
wall.
You doing
a spit take with the Diet Coke, like.
Pussy eggs.
But they're like, do you have pussy eggs here? Madness. We can't be given anything.
So I posted this and I thought that there would be kind of like a lot of gays, and there were a few that were like, oh my God, like they just like slid in with like the side eye emoji. They were like, oh my God, he's really beautiful, like my type. There are a few of those, but it was more women still. I could not believe it, Ivana. It was women being like, holy shit, I was about to slide in. Thank God I saw this.
Oh my God.
I was like, is the state of dating, is it this dire that you see one curly haired man in a black t-shirt and a pair of Ray-Bans and it's enough to send you into a spiral?
It's enough.
I could not believe it.
No, I think it's also because he's been vetted.
That's what I thought.
He's with you.
He's with
people
me.
People want someone that someone knows.
Yes.
To go out into a field of strangers is insane.
Mm-hmm.
Is madness. You have no idea. I just heard a story of a girl who slept with a serial killer by accident.
Wait, is this for real?
It is. I can't even get into the details.
Okay.
But she found out basically, like, had a, you know, casual thing with a guy, didn't see him, and then was contacted by the police and was like, this man has killed multiple women.
Oh, this is recent? This is not in 1975?
Nope, not 1975. No.
Holy shit.
I know. New York City.
Whoa.
Yeah. So I get it.
Not you baiting a hook with a story like that and then pulling it out of the water. No more for you, fishies.
No more for you, fishies. I'll divulge on the Patreon.
Okay. Yeah. We'll do that later.
Because it requires a content warning. It requires...
Yeah, yeah. There's a lot
but I do
on.
Think there's something fun about a dating horror stories because I feel like... Everybody's got them.
It was just so shocking to me. I really thought that, you know, the follow-up disclaimer would just really set everyone straight. And it did in a way, but it didn't in so many other ways. People were just so, still so excited about the prospect of this, you know, very good looking man. And I mean, he was obviously thrilled. He really was questioning everything. Like, holy shit, am I in the wrong
pool
over here? Yeah. Because this is really crazy. I mean, I would be the same. If a lesbian woman was so to post me and then just
like my beautiful girl.
Yeah, my beautiful girl. And then everyone just, I would be like, what am I doing?
Uh-oh. Certainly.
Wow. Chris and I were talking about this because we were talking about like the charcoal area that is talking to women on OnlyFans. No, because I was like, does that appeal to you as like a man, like to kind of like talk to a woman and like have this, you know, parasocial relationship where they like check in with you on their day and then they also send you like videos of them masturbating. Like I was like, is that like turning you on as a concept?
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, well, you and I, and I said, Of course, collectively, yeah. Our attention whores. And I said, naturally. And he was like, the whole point for us to cheat would be for validation. And I was like, that's exactly right.
A single tear falls down your face.
Never felt so understood.
Yeah.
That's the closest we would both come to cheating is because someone just validated us too hard. To pay for it takes away all the purpose.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. It exposes the naked ugliness underneath.
Transactional.
Yeah. To know thyself.
It's to see thyself.
It's to see thyself and to set thyself free.
Yeah.
Am I right?
But don't you think?
Yeah.
It's like that. I mean, that for me is really the only thing that would take me into the infidelity realm.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to be like hitting up Big John.
Because you're so like taken with his personality.
And his hot six pack.
Yeah.
No.
Big John, no.
No.
Lord, no. I think it is that. The scary ones are the ones where it feels like punitive. Like I know that there are other reasons people do it where it's like a control thing. It's like a secret thing.
Totally. Or not feeling fulfilled in their relationship.
Certainly. That's the saddest one, I think, where it's like nothing's happening here. So
where else can I go?
Where else can I go?
Without there being a whole situation. Switch up of my life. Yes, exactly.
A full life.
Without me starting a second family.
Yeah.
As we know, one A-list male celebrity has done, and for that you'll have to subscribe to the Patreon because that's on there.
It's all on there.
Yeah.
Oh my god, wow. My inspiration's smaller than yours.
Okay, tell me.
We always go story, tiny little detail.
Oh god, yeah. We have to switch up this format.
I know. I'll do a story next time.
Okay.
I'll think of a real story. It'll be like not just an inspiration.
Is this plastic bag in the wind?
This is maybe you might, but I feel this will maybe resonate with you. I have found my signature nail color. I have found it. After years of searching, I have found it, and you will never see me in anything else.
Is it what you're wearing right now?
It's what I'm wearing right now. It's OPI Brown to Earth. It is a very, very dark brown.
Okay.
And I have found it. I don't know how you feel about it now, and we can find out live how you feel about it.
Okay.
It's hard. You kind of have to be in the light.
Do you want to hold it up to the camera? Okay. Love.
And it's a very dark brown, and I saw it. I found it, and I said, oh my god, this is for me. And what inspires me about it is not so much like the color or the thing. It is the moments in one's adult life where you discover something that is so you, it's like you're reuniting with it.
Whoa.
Where it's like, I was born wearing this nail polish, but I found it here again. I forgot it. I forgot it for years, for decades. Mm. And now I found it again.
That is special.
It is.
Or it's almost when you reject something as too obvious.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh, that's too me. That's so me. That's so obvious. And you just turn away.
Yeah.
And then you're like, wait, why am I rejecting the very essence of myself?
Exactly.
Let me come home.
I think it scares us.
It does.
To really see ourselves.
I know.
Like the moments of true clarity, I completely understand why people like then drink a bottle of liquor.
Oh.
To run away.
Or bleach. I mean, I had a friend say to me, you are baby blue. Your life is baby blue. And I went, I don't like that. What's my favorite color?
Baby blue.
Exactly. Exactly.
Of course.
But how does she know that?
How does she know that?
Only because I wear it constantly.
How did she find
how
out about that?
How did she find out about
how
that?
Did she fi- how hold did it she to the camera. Hold it to the camera.
How did she find out about that? The color of my nails right now.
The pillow's behind me. It's closing in. No, it's scary. It's not for everyone to know about themselves. And some people will run all their lives.
You're right.
She's got so lightheaded. Thinking about all that.
So what do you feel now that you have this color on your fingertips? Do you feel actualized in a
way? I feel actualized.
Yeah.
I feel the way that I felt. My dear friend Jack, his very chic mother, sort of like Washington, D.C., fabulous, you know, always looks amazing. her signature color is Linkin Park After Dark. And I remember talking to her once and her saying, like, I've worn this color for 10 years. And I was like, wow. She's like, when I go to the nail salon, it's not a matter of, like, you know.
I'm not choosing.
No, I'm getting my color that I always wear.
Whoa. My mother always wears Candy Yum Yum, the Candy lipstick from Yum MAC.
Oh.
And she will never, that's her go-to, Candy yeah Yum Yum.
Candy Yum Yum.
And it is an expression of her. It's the brightest pink imaginable. And she doesn't care that it doesn't look natural. No one's lips will ever achieve that color. It is a highlighter pink.
Yeah.
But that's where she feels most at home, in Candy Yum Yum.
And she was born wearing it, I'm sure.
1,000%.
The name is perfect.
I know. It's like a Katy Perry teenage dream candy, like, floss type of pink. Yeah.
That's perfect. Oh, my God. So, yeah, I feel actualized. And I feel grown. And I feel excited about the future. And I've been doing it myself, which has also been, like, a very sweet little ritual.
That's nice.
Yeah.
Is it staying, do you find?
It's staying. I have one chip. But this is a couple days in.
That's so good.
And I'm hard on my hands. My God. I'm.
Oh, my God. You're doing things all the time.
I'm scrubbing dishes. I baked a cake this week.
Oh, my God.
I know. I fucked up, though. I fucked up the buttercream. I overprocessed the buttercream.
Oh, you had frosting.
I did vanilla buttercream frosting. And then at the last minute, I was like, wait, I'm going to zest some orange into this because it was a chocolate cake.
Oh.
And then I have a little orange blossom liquid. And so I was like, I'll just throw a little orange blossom. Oh, no.
It's when you get into the essences.
Yeah.
Everything goes wrong.
Yep. And then I had to keep mixing to, like, make sure it was all mixed up. And then I over, I don't know what even happened. It, like, it separated and it was horrible. It looked horrible.
From a family of bakers, as you know.
I know. I should have called
you. You should come to me.
I should have called you.
This is what I'm here for.
I know. And that's something I'm working on. Reaching
ask
out.
Ask for help. Put down the bottle of bleach.
Put down the bleach. Put down the beaters.
We got so Sylvia Plath so quickly.
I know.
Out of the oven.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Oh, God. Oh, shit.
No. Cake out of the oven.
Cake.
So we're talking about cake.
We're talking about cake.
Yeah. But, yeah.
Speaking of a man whose head is the size of cake.
Yeah.
That is such a reach of a segue.
He looks like a cartoon character. But a Simpsons.
Yes.
Yeah.
Isn't his head kind of, is it cake?
Certainly.
This is why I love you, because you went with that the entire way.
Of course. And it's really, yes and, baby. Yes. I'm trained.
But he, okay, I do say that because I have seen him in real life. He was.
Really?
He was in Larchmont. As I went to Rite Aid, he was sitting across the road having a dish of pasta alone and a glass of red wine.
Beautiful.
At La Pitola. You know that place where we went for an April Spritz?
Yes.
He was sitting outside just having a plate of pasta and a glass of red wine. Maybe 6 o'clock in the evening. I was picking up a prescription.
Oh.
And I thought, that is the largest head I've ever seen on a human. You know?
Yeah.
And, you know, redhead gang. So I'm always going to
ride.
I like him.
I mean, I have to say, I've known people who've worked for him.
Mm.
I have only heard the most wonderful things in the world. Like, this man believes in everyone, like, is a truly good force.
And that's really rare.
Yes.
You don't hear that about, I mean, let's just say no one's saying that about Ellen.
No. Especially not, like, some of these friends were, like, interns. Right. Where it's like, those are the people that would be treated the absolute worst.
Yes.
And they were like, I had the best experience. Like, he was the kindest. He was kinder to me than my own father is.
I've also heard a lot of women very sexually attracted to him.
Yes.
Yes.
The Conan effect.
What is it?
I don't know. I mean, I think it's the funny. It's knowing that they would be barely laughing.
I think it's the thick head of hair. And I think it's the 6'4". And it's the self-deprecation, and it's all of those things combined, and it's just the perfect storm of sexual vibration.
Certainly. And I mean, I do think that, speaking of dating, I feel like number one on a lot of people's lists is funny.
Yeah.
And not everybody has it. My God. I've listened to enough dates now to know.
I did have a hilarious conversation with a friend this week, and I was like talking about her sordid dating history. And I was like, you know, back then, you were looking for a different type of man. You were going for, like, cool and, like, you know, clouty and, like, you know, the Nike creative director type.
Ugh.
And she was like, yeah, exactly. Like, now I just want, you know, I just want kind and funny and has money.
Yeah.
And I was just kind of like, we're narrowing them down. Adjective you add into the mix.
Yeah.
Please stop.
It's like the beans on the table. It's like, this is how many men there are in the world. Like, this is how many are gay. This is how many are, like, currently incarcerated. This is how many are. And then it's like, there's one bean left on the table.
And where is he?
Yeah.
He's on an exchange in South Australia or something.
I know. He's in the Peace Corps.
Do you believe in soulmates?
I do.
Mm.
I do.
Do you believe in one or do you believe in many?
No, many.
Yeah. I feel the
one
same.
One feels crazy.
Oh, come on. One, how are you supposed to meet that man?
Yeah. No, what if they live far away? It's tough.
Yeah.
No, and I also believe that for friendships. Like, there are people really that I've met that I'm like, this person is a soulmate of mine.
Yeah, it's you.
Yeah.
Totally.
And the love is deep. Deep,
for
deep,
sure.
Deep. What about you?
I don't think we emphasize that enough too in society.
No.
Yeah.
No. It panics us.
Platonic, deep love. I tell you what, those breakups hurt a lot more than romantic breakups.
Oh my God. They shatter your earth.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I forgot a friend's birthday this week and I've had anxiety for 3 days.
Did you text?
I texted. I was like, I'm so sorry. I forgot your birthday.
Oh my God.
And then
owning up to it immediately.
I'm so sorry. I forgot your birthday. Happy birthday. I love you.
Yeah.
And I said to Chris, he hasn't texted me back. Like, that's it. Like, I really think it's our relationship. I just have a feeling. I know it in my bones. You know how I don't watch stories?
Yeah.
Chris showed me and he was like, he's like naked on a beach in Puerto Rico with his boyfriend.
Yeah.
And I was like, oh, okay. Yep. Okay. I need help. Yeah, I think.
Of course.
I get a text from him being like, fuck, so sorry, babe. I've been partying nonstop in Puerto Rico.
He doesn't know what day it is.
No.
He didn't know his own birthday.
No. God, no. He's been on a full bender for the past 48 hours and he's absolutely fine.
Oh God, the way we torture ourselves.
I know.
Isn't it so funny to think about? Like the days that you've spent like sick to your stomach over something that someone else is like, not, haven't thought about it twice.
I was actually losing sleep while he is sipping mojitos in old San Juan.
Beautiful. Beautiful.
But back to Conan.
Back to Conan.
Okay. This profile is from 1993. We have, I think, never gone back this far. Have we gone back to 93? Maybe Demi Moore was this old.
I think 91.
91.
That was 91.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So this is way back there for us.
Yeah.
This is,
which, perfect timing. This is coming right after
the Oscars.
The Oscars, which Conan has hosted.
Conan has hosted.
We are recording this pre-Oscars. So if something insane happened.
Yeah.
We're sorry. We're not going to be talking about it here today.
You know that my best and possibly only asset is my hair.
Oh my God, we can't go anywhere without you getting compliments.
Only because of the Megastar flat iron from New Me. I'm telling you, dude, this is the best thing that's ever happened to me. I'm going to throw some brands out. I used to be a GHD girl. I used to be a Harry Josh girl. I am only...
Chi?
What?
A Chi girl.
I used to be a Chi girl too.
Yeah, I know.
From now on, I'm only a New Me girl. I'm only a New Me Megastar flat iron girl. I'm telling you, it's the tourmaline technology. If you haven't heard of that, neither had I. It locks in moisture as it passes through your hair. So your hair doesn't get dry. It doesn't get fried. You can still control the heat.
And the infrared light strip prevents damage.
Oh, yeah.
Which is huge. So you can straighten as much as you want without having to worry about frying your ends.
This is an ad, but I'm being so genuine. This is such a good product.
Oh, and you're not the only one. I mean, it has 4.9 stars and 28,000 reviews.
28,000
reviews.
You're in good company. I know that you have an old rusty straightener right now and you need an upgrade and this is it. You can get 15% off the Megastar flat iron with the code UNCOVER. NUMEHair.com with the code UNCOVER. But 1993 was actually an insane year for culture. God, the Gen Xers, those who just kind of came of age during this time, Ivana, let me tell you, unbelievable what they had. I'll tell you what they didn't have. Strife. There wasn't a lot of pain happening. They did have Jurassic Park and Mrs. Doubtfire and Groundhog Day.
All amazing films.
They did have Whitney Houston's I Will Always Love You and Nirvana's In Utero and Janet Jackson's Janet.
Wow.
They did have Snoop Dogg. They did have all the West Coast hip hop boys. They did have the X-Files. They had Cheers. And then they also had some sad things, which was River Phoenix died outside the Viper Room.
Oh. So,
yeah, that's tough. And Michael Jackson's child molestation allegations came out this year.
1993.
93 was the first one. Oof. Yep. But, I mean, there was still Naomi Campbell and Cindy Crawford and Kate Moss dominating the runways. I mean, grunge fashion was popping off everywhere. Oh, who were you if you weren't in a flannel and a combat boot? Am I right?
So true.
Pearl Jam, Nirvana dominating youth culture. Starter jackets, Air Jordans. It was all like the money was there. The internet was not quite. And it seems like a really clutch time, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
I mean, apart from the Gulf War...
Yeah. I mean, to be in our business, I can't imagine a better time.
Oh my God. You were just cha-ching. Getting a brownstone in your contract when you signed on for that
junior editor job.
That junior editor job at Lucky Magazine.
Yeah.
So, and this was written by Lynn Hirschberg, who we know well in this sphere. She is a very prominent American journalist, renowned for her in-depth profiles and interviews with influential figures. She has written for everyone, Rolling Stone, Vanity Fair, New York Times. Everyone might know her best as the voice behind the Screen Test series, where she does like intimate video interviews with celebrities. It started actually for the New York Times style magazine T, and then later went to W, where she kind of like asked celebrities, like, if you were a cat, what kind of cat would you be?
Yeah.
And they just go like, I'd be a Persian.
Yeah.
And she's like, meow for me. And that's kind of what it is. It's all in black and white and it's very avant-garde.
Yeah.
But she is not without controversy. We know Lynn, and our girls know Lynn from the MIA profile. She basically called out MIA for, I guess, exalting the chaos of her home country in Sri Lanka while living this very like privileged lifestyle of like truffle fries and beautiful, glamorous Hollywood parties. And MIA was not happy. She retaliated by leaking Hirschberg's phone number on Twitter, posting audio recordings of their conversation, and it became known as like Trufflegate?
I think so.
She basically suggested that everything had been taken out of context, and it's really sparked a serious debate about journalistic ethics. And it wasn't the first time she had done it. So in 1992... We haven't fucking done
this yet. I know. It's because it's like every time we're like, no, it's too good.
It's too
good. We have to save it.
She profiled Courtney Love and Kurt Cobain, and it was titled Strange Love. And she wrote about their relationship and accused Courtney of using heroin while pregnant with their daughter, Frances Bean Cobain. It basically led to major consequences. They were under investigation by Child Services and they denied the claims, and Courtney Love went on to accuse Hirschberg of being the reason behind Kurt Cobain's suicide. So it was really fucking serious.
Yeah.
Imagine having that on your shoulders. Talk about losing sleep. Like,
oh my God, no. I also think that she has a song either called Die Lynn Hirschberg or Fuck Lynn Hirschberg. Like, she, like, it was public and intense.
And if anyone was to Google Lynn Hirschberg, you would find her rubbing shoulders with every A-lister on the planet, even now.
Yeah.
Like, she is next to Millie Bobby Brown. She is hugging Robert Pattinson. She is still, to this day, in her, I think, 60s, still very much in the mix. She is on the scene. So I've got to hand it to her. Like, she has remained at the forefront of culture for over 30 years.
It's hard to do.
Fully.
Yeah.
It's really hard to do.
Wow.
And she, I get the impression, was very taken with Conan. I think she liked him a lot. Conan was 33 at the time of this profile. He was born in 63 in Massachusetts in a Catholic family. He is a Harvard baby. We're going to talk about Nepo babies. We can't overlook Conan. He went to Harvard University, but his father was a professor at Harvard Medical School and his mother was an attorney. He was very, very bright. He majored in history and literature and became the president of the Harvard Lampoon, which is that really famous magazine they have there, humor magazine. And that's where he honed his comedic writing skills. He graduated magna cum laude in 1985. And then he was just fucking off to the races, writing on The Simpsons, writing on Saturday Night Live. And then with no fucking performing experience, became a late night television host.
Yeah, everyone just believed in him.
Yeah.
Like, Lorne Michaels was like, this kid has it.
Yeah. He was just a writer.
Yeah.
It's kind of like if you were to take, I was going to say Colin Jost, but even he has more on-camera experience.
Yeah.
Like, who could you pinpoint?
We wouldn't be able to because they're in the writer's room.
Yeah, we don't know them.
We've never seen them.
No.
And they just, yeah.
It's, Lorne just has a way about him where he's just kind of like, I think you're kind of hot.
Yeah, he's like God.
Yeah.
He's just like, you.
Yeah.
It's you.
He said to Pete Davidson, he was like, you're hot and I know it.
Yeah.
And everyone else is going to see it too. Everyone else is going to see it soon.
And they did.
And they did. Ariana, Kim, Cassie David.
Yeah.
They all saw.
Kate Beckinsale.
Oh, my God.
They all saw.
And in between, he was kind of like in the Groundlings where you know, Will Ferrell and Kristen Wiig and Melissa McCarthy, the list goes on. They all got their start. Jennifer Coolidge was in the Groundlings. Did you know that?
No way.
Yeah.
That makes sense. She's a comedic genius.
Oh, is she what?
Do you know it's also like a full, like, it's like an MLM. You pay to take the classes.
Yeah.
And then unless you pass, like you have to pass to go into the next level.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't pass, you just have to pay again and take the class again. And you're like encouraged to like bring students in. It's not an MLM. That's a large accusation. But it is sort of...
Yeah, that's a scheme for sure.
It's a scheme of sorts.
Wow, I didn't know that because you're also performing.
Yeah.
And people, i.e. us, the public, pay to see those performances.
Yeah.
So where does the money go? Just to the groundlings?
Yeah, I think to keep it going. I know.
We'll delve further into that.
Yeah, that'll... Yeah. An investigation for another time.
Right. Educating Conan is the title of this profile. And the subheadline reads, Conan O'Brien is the most famous unknown in America. Since the stunning announcement that he would be the new keeper of NBC's precious late night time slot, the life of the 30-year-old comedy writer has been a hurricane of microphones, Klieg lights, and questions. Lynn Hirschberg was with O'Brien as he began his metamorphosis from average guy to certified celebrity. And this, I think, God. I got to explain the late night wars if we're even going to start this right?
Yeah.
I got to get into it
now.
No,
certainly. I think so. And I have to say before you do, something about this just moves something in me because gossip with a bunch of older men, like just like male ego, gossip, panic, stress. There's something about it where it's like so off. You know, we're always talking about Jen Aniston v. Angelina Jolie.
Yeah.
We never get this. Of just like a bunch of guys freaking out.
Talking shit.
Mm-hmm. Making life harder for each other.
Fully.
Yeah.
I mean, okay. There has been various waves of war. Various conflicts in the overall war, I would say. I mean, the same way you would describe like the Cold War and how it's like in 1963 and then again in 1969. It has been the same way with late night. So... we kick off with Leno versus Letterman. This was 92 to 93 when Johnny Carson announces he's retiring from The Tonight Show after 30 years.
I know.
On air.
Yeah.
Many believe that David Letterman, who is the host of Late Night with David Letterman, which aired after The Tonight Show on NBC, would take over. But instead, NBC chose Jay Leno. And that became very contentious. So big fallout. Letterman said, fuck you, NBC. Moved to CBS, launched The Late Show with David Letterman in 1993, obviously became a massive hit. There isn't a man over 35 in America who doesn't love David Letterman with their heart and soul. The Tonight Show with Jay Leno and The Late Show with David Letterman became two direct competitors at 11:30 p.m. And then the ratings battle basically just went back and forth. Leno ultimately dominated due to just like his high profile exclusives. He just got everyone. He actually got the Hugh Grant scandal interview after Hugh Grant
really?
Was caught, you know, getting a blowy on Sunset from the Lady of the Night.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. I haven't said blowy. I don't think ever.
Blowy's good.
It's kind of good.
It's good.
It's not yoni.
No.
What else are you going to say? Like,
it's beach. Playful. It's playful.
It's fun.
It's fun. It's fun.
It's fun.
It's a little beach ball in the air.
It is. It's party time.
Yeah, it is.
Totally. So then the second kind of wave of the late night war came in with Conan. So that was Conan versus Jay Leno. And this is 2009, 2010. In 2004, NBC was like, okay, Conan, you're going to take over The Tonight Show. And he was hosting Late Night with Conan O'Brien, which is what we're getting into in this profile. You're now going to take over The Tonight Show. And then Leno, who was a rating success, was like, I actually don't want to leave The Tonight Show. I'm so happy here. It's been 20 years. I'm good. And NBC's like, we really want you to go. Like, we're going to kind of like push you out. So they offer him a new show, the Jay Leno show at 10 p.m. And then Conan took over the Tonight Show and then both shows flopped.
Yeah.
So
it's
now
like they were battling each other.
And then
which doesn't work.
Yeah, it doesn't work. Both were, you know, a disaster. NBC is now panicking. So now they're deciding to put Leno at the 11:35 slot and push Conan's Tonight Show to 12:05 a.m., and Conan's like, fuck that. Like, there's no such thing as a post-midnight Tonight Show. That's a late show. So he leaves NBC accepting a $45 million buyout. Crazy.
Yeah.
And then Leno returns to host The Tonight Show in 2010. And then, I mean, we can get into this. There's a third wave of the late night wars. That's Fallon and Colbert and Kimmel from 2014 to 2015, where Jimmy Fallon came in and replaced Jay Leno and David Letterman retired, replaced by Stephen Colbert. And they were now fighting it out. Fallon has always kind of like led in ratings due to like viral segments, but Colbert then kind of took the lead based on his like politics forward subject matter. So to this day in the 2020s, I think Colbert is always leading, like he's always in the front slot, and Fallon is always doing okay because he has the celebs and he is very digital driven.
Yeah.
And Kimmel is just Kimmel and people like him.
People do like him. There's something so devastating about this story because Conan, in the end, I think only hosted The Tonight Show for like 9 months.
Yeah.
It's like an unbelievably short amount of time. And it was his dream. Like the big reason for leaving was it was a call for integrity. Fully. Where he was like, I will not desecrate this show that meant everything to me
growing
and
up.
Means everything to me growing up. Like this was my dream job and I refuse to, you know, push it back to, I mean, 1205 is crazy. It's
to call 1205 a fucking Tonight Show. And come
it's,
on.
It's so strange. Like I would die to know why Jay Leno did all of this because he only ended up hosting it for another 4 years.
Yeah.
Like it was like he had hosted it successfully for 20 years. And then instead of gracefully bowing, it became this really messy little thing. And everyone was talking about it. Everyone was covering it. It was like, you know, cover of People was like the late night wars.
I think it's the whole thing of not having the choice, right? Like yeah. Carson stepped down. The fact that Leno was like, I'm not ready and you're pushing me. I think this is really NBC's fumble. They overpromised and underdelivered to everyone involved.
Yeah.
But it begins like this. Really fun opening. Conan, look this way. Conan, could you look over here? Turn this way. Conan. It's 5 p.m. on May 3rd and Conan O'Brien, a 30-year-old heir to David Letterman's 12:35 time slot on NBC, is being greeted by press at the Rainbow Room, 65 floors above Rockefeller Center. Seconds ago, O'Brien emerged rather unceremoniously through a back door. Can't take the kitchen, he explained. They tried that with Bobby Kennedy. Whew, an assassination joke right out the gate. Right. Flanked by NBC heads and was immediately engulfed by a sea of 40-odd photographers clicking and flashing and shouting, Conan, in a frenzied state. They should have prepared for him for this, says Gavin Poloni. Pallone or Poloni? I'm gonna have to say this a lot, so let's get it right.
I feel like I want to say Pallone.
Yeah, I always say Pallone.
Yeah.
Okay. Gavin Pallone, O'Brien's agent. But contrary to Pallone's concerns, O'Brien doesn't look unhappy. In fact, he looks remarkably comfortable. He turns and smiles and turns again with the poise of a seasoned politician. One thing we have to get straight, O'Brien says as the bulbs pop, is my name. It's pronounced Conan, not Conan. It's Liviosa.
It's Liviosa.
Liviosa.
Oh, my God.
So he's a lot calmer now than he was a few hours ago, but it's been extremely intense for the past few days. He found out 1 week ago that NBC had picked him, a highly regarded comedy writer for Saturday Night Live and The Simpsons, literally no performing experience, to take over Letterman's job. This is like unprecedented, totally insane. Since then, his life has shifted into high gear in a manner that really has no show business parallel, Lynn writes. His ascension from unknown to famous person has been nearly instantaneous. Fame usually builds gradually for a comedian. Like you start up in stand-up, move to a guest on The Tonight Show, make an appearance on a sitcom, and then maybe, just maybe, you get your own show. But O'Brien leapfrogged all of those steps. And from the moment he received the call from his agent 7 days ago, being like, you got 12:30, to the press conference this evening, his life has gone in a flash from private to public. And everyone wants to know, who is Conan O'Brien?
Oh, a perfect assignment.
A perfect assignment.
To catch him a week after. It's like, it's still fresh enough that what you're getting is like truly the raw.
Yeah. And you can tell Vanity Fair were like,
go.
Someone get out there.
Yeah.
Who the hell is this kid? This 30-year-old kid who's replacing the David Letterman.
Yeah.
Do you think it's James Corden-y in the way it's like, wow, this was just a guy from Gavin and Stacey, this random British sitcom who's now got this coveted American spot?
I think also for the regular public, yes. And then for inner comedy circle, maybe no.
Yeah.
But it's like, that's such a small percentage of people that are like, I know who is a writer at SNL right now. It's like most people just watch and are like, that's funny.
Totally. Like
they put Davidson on there.
Put Davidson.
That's him with no tattoos. But
who is it? Poot Lovato.
I think about Poot Lovato.
We'll post right now.
I'll post live on air because the people have to see that ASAP as possible.
But he kind of like always wanted this. And for that reason, he wasn't really nervous. He's not the nervous sort. He just wants to kill it. His old friend is like, Conan is very determined. It sounds corny, but he strives for excellence. He's focused. Okay, the reason I wanted to pull out this quote straight off the dome was that it reminds me a lot of old
Timmy
Shalemme.
It's so true.
We haven't even spoken about this on a personal level.
Yeah.
What was your take on the speech?
I liked it.
So did I.
Because the gracious stand up hour, the like, I can't believe, I never would have imagined, I'm just as surprised as you are that I'm here.
Did I expect this?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It is not true. Some people are working really, really hard to ensure that something like this happens to them in their lives.
Yeah, that campaigning.
They're campaigning, they're working, they're doing everything they can. They've been trying for years. And I also appreciated about Chapel Roan and Sabrina Carpenter that they're not like, what? Me?
Yeah.
They're like, yeah, I've been trying this for 10 years. Like Sabrina's like, I was on a Disney Channel show, like clocking in and clocking out.
Thanks for seeing me.
Yeah. Trying to get here where I am now.
It's, I think what rubbed people the wrong way was like the pursuit of greatness stuff. Mm-hmm. Everyone was like, take a seat.
Yeah.
But I found it really refreshing. I thought it was endearing. I thought it was honest and brave. Because to say outwardly, I want to win.
Yeah.
I'm trying to win. I mean, that's brave. So many people have got up there and be like, I'm just trying to do really good work. And like, it's just, this means that I can do more work. Thank you so much.
Yeah.
He was saying, no, that's not enough. I want to be like the best in the fucking business.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to stop until I am. So.
And he's got a really good shot.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's true.
And that it was his first awards acceptance speech ever. He's been nominated a million times for a million things and never won.
I saw a compilation of like all the videos trained in on his face losing. Of just like,
yeah. Yeah.
Yep. There it comes.
And that was his speech. That was his first acceptance speech.
Yeah.
I thought was very revealing.
Yeah.
There was no token deprecation. There was no like, all right, everybody. There was no like Kieran Culkin, like this old thing. It's so heavy in my hands. It was literally I recognize the weight of this.
Yes.
Literally.
And I'm honored.
Yeah.
And I'm going to keep striving for it.
Yeah.
This is not what I want. Yeah. I know.
I liked it. And it's very Conan coded. I mean, this is who he is.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, he is walking into this press conference basically to just discuss this new appointment. And he has been so nervous that prior to it, he just walked into a church on like Fifth Avenue. He was raised Roman Catholic, hasn't been to a church in fucking years. Goes in and he's like, oh my God, it's an Episcopal church. It's not a Catholic church. This is God laughing at me and telling me I don't deserve this job, that I would just find a church and it's not the right one.
Mm-hmm. It's also such a powerful visual, being so nervous you run into a church to be like, I help, like somebody help.
But Lynn's like, look, like the gods are in his side. Like he's here with a zoo of 200 journalists facing him and they're asking him, do I feel any pressure? And he's doing really well. He's not missing a beat. They're saying, asking him questions like, so have you ever had a homosexual experience? And he is so quick. He's like, not yet, but hey, life is moving so fast, so anything's possible. They ask him about his salary, like all these questions that are super off-putting, like really like to trip him up. He goes, I held up for a lot of money. I made them pay me $32 million. And no, let's just say I'm going to have to get a day job. So basically like he's probably getting paid pittance because he has no previous experience. And like, he's just able to take all of this on the chin. He's doing really well.
No, he's so quick. I've listened to his like podcast and it's insane to watch his brain work. Clearly he is like a very, very smart man, but how fast he is at coming up with a joke. It's unbelievable.
It's scary.
It's scary.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing.
He also has been one of the few late night hosts. I mean, this is a tangent, but to come out without any kind of dirt on the shoulder about how he's treated women.
Yeah.
He has always been so effortlessly respectful and effusive with female guests, yeah. like just really lovely to his female guests. Whereas like everyone was like, oh, fucking Pam Anderson. He's just always been like, it's so incredible to have you here. What a beautiful woman to have with me. I think you're gorgeous. Congratulations on everything. Like he's just always been a delight.
And they are, so many of them are like that. They're like, why don't you show me a little tit?
Yes.
It's like, what?
Strip for me.
Yeah. Literally.
Demi Moore literally stripped for David Letterman.
Yeah. 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 And, you know, power to her. She can do whatever she wants. Mm-hmm. But there was this very gross sort of understanding between the male host and the young female star of like, oh, you're getting me excited. And it's like, shut your fucking mouth.
Dude, there is this Blake Lively profile that has emerged recently.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot find it for the life of me, but I have seen excerpts. Like I've seen printed excerpts of it. It's Glamour UK in 2009. She's talking about Letterman and she's saying, yeah, we got on so well because he loves pretty girls and he loves flirting with beautiful girls. And that is like what my experience was like on his show. God, she doesn't do herself any favors. Let me tell you.
Me just.
You passing out.
I can't. Yeah. Lightheaded again.
Trying to give yourself a compliment. Yeah. You just threw that man under the bus.
Yeah.
So hard.
Yeah.
Crazy.
That's tough. 2009 was a crazy year.
She also said that she does no exercise and eats whatever she wants in that profile.
And thank you for that. And thank you for that. We all needed to hear that.
She's like, I know it must be so annoying to hear and I really should work out for my health, but this is just how my body is. God, would everyone just lay off? What I wouldn't give to have that text.
I know.
I think I might buy it on eBay. I found it. It's $30. I think it's worth the investment.
Oh, yeah. I'll split it with you.
Let's split it.
I've got five in my pocket. I'll Venmo you 10.
Let's just let's have it in our hands.
Let's have it.
It's just too good.
I mean, that's really where I feel we could go is to find the out of print. To find the out of print.
The things that aren't online.
Yeah.
Totally.
That could be something.
Okay.
Something magic.
Okay. Something to think about.
Yeah.
So he's doing really well in this press conference. He is like, even questions that are really personal, like, do you have a girlfriend? He is managing to really gracefully subvert. He says, you know, like, I'm just doing this to make my brothers laugh. And when someone goes, are you living out your dream? He says, well, there is something almost frightening in getting exactly what you want. And that line really scared the shit out of me. I think about that a lot with various people and I can only imagine. After the press conference ends, he is with his agent and they head downstairs to Saturday Night Live. And he immediately runs into some of the SNL cast members. He sees Rob Schneider of Adam Sandler fame.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he's going through some stuff right now, but we won't get into that. He
says, never enough time.
No.
Never enough time.
To get into the problematic man of Hollywood. This podcast would never end.
No.
No.
4-hour episodes.
Yeah.
Minimum.
He says, hey, man, congratulations. And he gets this kind of hero's welcome from his old team. Chris Farley comes up and is like tackling O'Brien. So excited to see him.
I also have to point out how Lynn describes Chris Farley as, quote, a large and apparently enthusiastic fellow. She brutalized him. She brutalized him with that one.
Me being described as large and apparently enthusiastic. Large and in charge.
Large and in charge.
Oh my God.
I know.
So they walk into like a writer's office at SNL and this fellow writer, Robert Smigel.
Yeah.
Smigel. Was like, Conan was like amazing to work with. They basically were like hanging out like 15-year-olds with millions of dollars. They were pulling all-nighters. And the former head of NBC and Paramount was like, yeah, you get the feeling they haven't discovered girls. Like these SNL writers who are just dweebs in the room, like fucking string cheese and like messy and putting together this show every week.
That's so sweet to think about.
Lynn writes, au contraire, that professionally, while O'Brien fits that profile, he is actually socially well-adjusted. And that immediately distinguishes him from most of his colleagues. So basically, like, she's like, he's hot and the rest of them are fucking uggos. She's like, you know, he grew up in Brookline, Massachusetts. He went to Harvard. He comped to get on the Harvard Lampoon, which means he went through this grueling process where he submitted a lot of pieces and criticisms are written directly on the manuscript by each Lampoon member, which can you imagine?
Oh my God.
Everyone being like, bad.
Yeah.
17 members being like, hate it.
Not funny.
Not funny. Yeah. Not funny. They can be brutal, Lynn writes. Conan was good from the start, says Jeff Martin, who was then president of the Lampoon and went on to write for Letterman and The Simpsons. You could tell right away. So after getting on the Lampoon, he was elected president, serving two consecutive terms, something that hadn't happened since 1912. Okay,
I'm starting, man of the people.
I'm starting to think this guy is like a total anomaly genius. If I didn't think that already, it's crazy.
Yeah.
As soon as he graduated, he moved to LA and quickly got a job with his then partner, Greg Daniels, very famous name, on HBO's Not Necessarily the News. They used to wake up together in the morning and drive to work together, and their desks faced each other, and it was tough. And
his girlfriend had recently broken up with him and he wasn't eating.
That was when he started performing at the Groundlings, and he was just working, living the LA grind, working on a bunch of little shows. After one of the shows that he worked on bombed, he moved east to New York to write and then, as he hoped, perform occasionally on Saturday Night Live. That's when he met Robert Smigel, who he began working with as a stand-up comedian. They started writing together and they kind of just like, he just spent then 3.5 years at SNL. He left because he was restless.
Okay, baby.
And then he immediately got the call. Do you want to be on The Simpsons? He's basically had no downtime. He's moved from job to job because he's that talented. He was like, yes, I do. It was that easy. I just wanted to play on that team. The Simpsons is like the Olympic basketball team. They're all top of the line people and they're all in one room. And he actually became the hit of that room. One of the writers was like, he was always putting on a show for us. The actual doing of The Simpsons is sitting with the same 8 guys. We're getting out of shape and pale. It's the end of our youth in that room, and Conan would make us laugh. He was great. Conan's the guy you'd want to fix up with your little sister. You root for him.
Oh my God.
Cute. That's actually the highest compliment I think a straight man can give. That's another straight man. I would let you date my sister.
It's like, I trust you.
I've thought about it.
Yeah.
And that would
be
okay.
You may have her.
Yes. I've decided for her. And the Simpsons really, really wanted to keep him on staff. But with his 30th birthday approaching, he was ready to make a change. He wanted to perform. His plan was like, I'm not going to renegotiate. I'm going to get off this road and I'm going to get on another road. I've always thought there's something here that I'm not using. And when you know you can do something and you're not doing it, it's hell.
Mm-hmm.
That also really struck me.
Yeah.
When you know you can do something and you're not doing it, it's hell. Is that not the truest words ever spoken?
No, of course. I wake up every day haunted. Haunted.
By the fact you're not lifting weights.
Yeah. And the passion projects, like the little, you know, the things that mean everything, but it's like other stuff gets in the way always.
Yeah, for sure.
It's why it's a marvel when anyone makes a painting, writes a book, releases an album.
Gets anything done.
It's miraculous.
It really is.
Every time it's miraculous. It is.
Wow.
And he, as someone that strives for excellence, it makes so much sense that he's like, even though he's got quote unquote something that's like, you know, it's a million girls would kill for this job. It's about him and his like inner markers. And he's like, I know that there's more out there for me.
For sure. And like, he just had such self-belief, but also it seems that everyone around him was like, you are good. You are meant to do this, which must have helped so much because as someone who's never performed before, I mean, Robert Smigel was like, we've always talked about him hosting a show and we didn't know exactly what the show would be, but he's just got the perfect personality for a talk show host. He is the most spontaneously funny person I know. He's incredibly smart and likable. I remember something my sister actually said to me. She's worked in television now for like 15 years. The most successful hosts are someone who balance likability and credibility. And that is something that comes across so strongly with Conan. It's like you believe him and you want to be his friend.
Yeah.
And that's it.
That's so interesting. And it's like, I would love to make a matrix of where they all sit now. Like, where is Drew Barrymore on that matrix?
Well, I don't believe a fucking thing that Jimmy Fallon says.
Oh, no. I do not like that man.
No.
I am not taken
well,
by
he's
him.
So inauthentic.
It is. I can't watch.
Yeah.
How did he do it?
I know.
Like, and to think, like, the devastation of, like, we could have had Conan. Conan could have done it for 30 years.
For sure.
But because of this moment, because of what would come 10 months later, we didn't.
Yeah. I know. The Jimmy Fallon of it all, he doesn't connect with me whatsoever. No. I don't feel anything watching him.
Nothing.
I don't find him funny.
No.
I just, like, nothing hits.
Not interesting, not funny. I liked him in Fever Pitch.
We say this, we get invited on the show. We have to walk back all our words.
Oh my God.
It's like when Ayoa Debris tweeted about J-Lo and then had to host Saturday Night Live with her.
Yeah.
She was like, she's a terrible singer. Has anyone noticed?
Oh my God.
And then she was the musical guest and Ayoa was the host. Imagine.
This is the problem with the digital footprint.
But we have to be true to ourselves.
It's so true.
These are our opinions.
And honestly, I implore him to prove us wrong.
Please. Please.
Yeah.
I know. And
I'm ready to change.
You bring up an interesting point in Drew because she's someone who is, I mean, arguably extremely authentic, extremely herself. It's just that it's a tough authenticity to swallow. It's not necessarily likable.
Well, it's the credibility, I feel like, that gets lost.
Yes.
It's like she is like becomes a mother to all of her guests. Mm-hmm. But then there isn't that distance that you need to be able to like interview properly or like to...
Or to make everyone else feel comfortable, including her guests.
Yeah.
Like, we feel uneasy, I think, when she is, like, making out with Martha Stewart on air.
Because Martha's uneasy.
Because Martha's uneasy.
And we pick up on that.
For sure.
Yeah.
What did she say to Kamala Harris? We need a Kamala mama.
We need, oh God.
We need a Kamama.
Kamama.
Yeah.
Oh, no, it was something bad. No, please. No.
It wasn't good. I'll tell you that much.
Oh, my God.
On the way out from SNL, Conan intersected with Lorne Michaels, the great Lorne Michaels, and his wife, Alice. So someone goes, what do you think of the press conference to Lorne? And he goes, Conan had some stuff, but now it's time to get back to work. He is so godlike.
Yeah.
He is like Dumbledore.
Yeah. He floats into a room and he floats out.
Totally. So that night, Lynn is going to dinner with Conan. We're all going out in the town. He's wearing a t-shirt. His hair is wet from the shower. She says he looks like Dennis the Menace stretched out six feet 4 inches. And she gets into his childhood a little bit. So he grew up with a doctor father, mother lawyer. He went to church every Sunday. He says that his first word was affiliate, although that memory might be apocryphal. I can't imagine anyone's first word was affiliate.
No.
Affiliate links?
I can't. That's tough. And of course, like a good Catholic family, he is one of three brothers and two sisters.
Yes.
So it was like chaos kind of in their house.
He was like, I hated the way I looked because I had a big Irish face and freckles and red hair. And he tells a really kind of interesting story about women. He talks about his first prom and he really liked this girl and he heard that this girl liked him and he just never had the guts to ask her out. And then she called him up and was like, so what are you up to for prom? And even in that moment, he couldn't pull the trigger. And he was like, I'm actually busy and I'm helping my dad. So hangs up the phone, decides that he's going to actually help his dad because he can't have that not be a truth. So on prom night, he helps his dad like plant some shrubs, goes to the plant store and picks up fertilizer. And as he's loading up bags of fertilizer, a limo pulls up next to him of his girl that he likes with her date, and he just waves at them and they wind up the tinted limo window and they drive away. Just has to let her go.
Oh,
horror.
But there is a very sweet story that I'll follow this up with, which did you know that Conan met his wife on a little segment on the Late Night Show?
No, I didn't know that.
Yes, they met, like their first time meeting is recorded on camera and was taken with her, and they've been married for like a million years.
Well, at this moment in time, he's with Lisa Kudrow from Friends, but Friends hadn't started yet.
Wow.
Lisa was just like, she was in the Groundlings, like she was in, or maybe it was UCB, but she was like a really LA improv type actress. She was in little plays and getting work that way. So crazy. And she said has nothing but good things to say about Conan. I've heard her on podcast talk about him. But at this point in time, he is exhausted. He has been sought after by every agent in town. Eventually he signed with UTA. People were just courting him left and right. CAA offered him Coke commercials. ICM sent him a designer pizza at The Simpsons. When they went to UTA, everyone at a weekly staff meeting held up signs that read, "We love you, Conan." Like, such intense wooing. It was crazy how much people wanted him. Mm-hmm. They all had an idea that he was going to be the next big thing. And then he signed with his current agent, who is 29 only. Crazy. And represents most of the writers on The Simpsons and Seinfeld, and is known to be extremely aggressive on behalf of his clients. I loved this quote from his agent, who's like, "I'm never afraid to confront anybody if I think it's the right thing to do. Go off, Gavin. Yeah. Get your little acrylics out and stop clapping them all over town."
Yeah.
That's the type of agent I would want.
Oh my God, of course. You're done.
So he would eventually sign with UTA, and the first thing he wanted to do was get out of The Simpsons. Fox was like, "Please, fuck God, no, don't leave us." They offered him a 7-figure deal to stay on and develop other shows. Him and his agent turned it down. They just really wanted a late night job. Conan would talk to Lorne Michaels every single day about it. He would have these really long meetings with Lorne. When he found out that they were searching for a host, it was like, if you're going to hire an unknown, you got to use Conan. You got to get Conan. And over this kind of next, you know, few weeks, months, it just became about putting Conan in the ring. So he was like testing. He was up against people like, I don't know if people would know Rick Reynolds, but like Drew Carey's name was also out and about. They had showcases arranged and they were all like, there isn't a clear cut winner. Like, each guy is good. But what ended up going down with Conan is that he was so good in his interview test. He had an actress sit down with him and he was just so natural, so funny, so chill. She had done Playboy and she was like, but I did it in like a classy way. And he was like, so you're telling me you like wore a top hat and were reading The New Yorker? He's fast.
Yeah.
You know? And then the whole time during his test, he was like doing this kind of like thing, this bit of being like, oh, I like it here. Like, this feels good. Like, it feels good. And like, it was playing really well. Like, they weren't like, he's coming off like a cocky Kanye type.
Yeah. And natural. And that you can't fake.
Natural's the word. I know. I was having this conversation this week where someone was like, you know, you can't teach taste and you can't teach knowledge of culture.
No. And you can't teach ease.
But NBC, they had someone they wanted. They had someone they had their eyes on other than Conan. And they went hard for him. They went hard for this guy called someone Shandling. And I think it says a lot that we can't remember his name.
Gary
Shandling. Do you know who that man is?
No.
Never heard of him in my life.
No.
Gary Shandling. They were obsessed with him. So Conan was just like, okay, I'm going to go back to The Simpsons. I'm going to just wait this shit out. And he's like, I really wasn't carrying my weight at The Simpsons in those last days. He's now knows that it's between him and Gary Shandling, this 12:35 spot. It was his 30th birthday and he still didn't know if he had the job. People were coming to his birthday party like, you got the job? He's like, I don't know. I really, really don't know. Gary Shandling ended up asking for $5 million a year, which was $2 million more than Jay Leno was making. And it just became like, okay, this guy is untenable. He doesn't want the job. He wouldn't be asking for that much money if he wants the job. We got to give it to Conan.
Wow.
He gets the job. Immediately, NBC goes into overdrive. It's decided that he would be introduced on The Tonight Show the same evening. Lorne Michaels was vehemently opposed to this plan. He preferred that O'Brien would be introduced at the New York press conference a week later, a situation that he could control. But NBC was afraid that the news would leak. And besides, they felt like they owed Leno. They wanted to have him introduce O'Brien to a waiting world. "I thought it was a giant mistake," says Michaels, "but one which I understood." On the show, Leno was gracious, and O'Brien, who seemed a bit stunned, kept saying, "I'm just thrilled," again and again. He didn't say much else, and then almost instantly, he was gone. When he got home that evening, O'Brien, who had a listed phone number, had 58 messages on his machine. "I pulled the phone out of the wall," he says. Pallone, meanwhile, was still trying to extricate him from his Simpsons contract, which wasn't easy to do this late in the game. "They were being grossly unfair," recalls Pallone. "They were trying to get compensation from NBC and a lot of money from Conan, as well as a first look at his future pilot ideas before they would release him from his Simpson contract." Eventually, Fox got what they wanted.
This liminal space is so interesting to me because I think there's this idea when something good happens that like everyone is just like running around, you know, like eating cake and popping bottles.
Yeah.
And often it's more complicated than that. I mean, actually always it's more complicated than that. It's like you have to leave something to go somewhere. You have to deal with fallout. You have to negotiate. It's never just a true like childlike like, wow, everything's working out.
It was just like a really interesting time. He was like the new kid in town. Everyone was like just wanting to know who the fuck he was and how he got this big, big job. So he goes on Letterman and he's nervous, even though Letterman was gracious. And afterwards he's like, I have dreams where David Letterman is beating me to death in the alley. And Lynn Hirschberg's like, he was half joking, but the pressure of the week did take its toll. Although O'Brien is remarkably self-contained, the strain of going from being a private to a public person in a matter of days is exhausting. My feeling now is go, man, go, he says. Just go. It's not always comfortable immediately. This is not familiar terrain. But like today, I was in Times Square and this one wise guy said, you're not as funny as Letterman. And I said, yeah, but I'm taller. And the guy goes, you're taller, but he's funnier. The story clearly irritates O'Brien, Lynn writes. People are expecting that the show is going to be the next dimension, he continues. No, it's going to be a talk show with those basic talk show components. What I'd like to do is, where possible, kind of surprise people. Comparing me to Letterman is like taking Coca-Cola and trying to make me a Diet Coke. Mm-hmm. He's like, it's not Coke. I'm not trying to be Coke. He smiles and says, I know why I'm doing this. I'm not doing this to become really rich. And you know, I have no sex drive. It was destroyed years ago in a mining accident. So I'm not doing this to sleep around. I don't really want a fast car. The car he's driving only has 18,000 miles on it. Well, what I really want is the satisfaction of doing a good job. He pauses. I just want to do the show. He says finally. That's the fun.
Oh,
God, he's a good man.
And it does devastate me to think of what comes after, but he got his dream.
No, I mean, he did
the dream of his life.
He did this show for a really long time. Like, he did this show for a really long time.
Yeah, Conan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He just, the Tonight Show he did for 10 months.
Yeah.
This slot he had for years and years and years.
And it was amazing. And everyone loved him.
Yeah.
And loves him.
And the only reason it didn't work out with the Tonight Show is because Jay Leno could not step away.
And that's too bad.
It's funny. Speaking about the Oscars and everything that's going on, I just didn't realize how few people want that job. Like, so few people want to host the Golden Globes, the Oscars, the SAG Awards, the Critics' Choice, whatever. And not to bring it back to me and emceeing.
Yeah, but.
But we must.
Yeah.
But it's funny. It is actually, it's a huge honor, but it's also like, of course, you can imagine why people would not want to take it on, because it's like, fuck, it's a lot of work.
Mm-hmm.
And for these big celebrities, I think it's like very little compensation.
Yeah.
And you are putting yourself up for such scrutiny. I mean, it's like masochism. You are getting ready to be flayed, like picked apart.
Yeah.
And it's scary as fuck.
It is. And you have to be so funny, but a very specific kind of funny. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of prep that goes into it. It's just like you have to be like pop culture historian, expert, and roast comedian. Like, it's like you're wearing nine hats the whole time.
Right.
It's a really tough job.
And I don't know how thankful it is. Like, I don't know what you get out of it in a real way. But then it's like you look at Nikki Glaser and her career. She's kind of had to take time off after the Globes because it was such a high that she was just like, damn, where to from here?
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, she went on record saying a lot of people turned that down before I accepted it, you know? They are not, everyone wants to do it. Not a lot of comedians want to do it. No. Joe Coy obviously got, you know, torn to shreds.
Oh my God.
It's just, it's a hard, hard job to get up there and in front of all your peers, in front of some of the most celebrated people in history and be like, hey, everybody, watch me tap dance.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And Conan, I can be sure. I don't know what was said. We have yet to watch, mm-hmm. but I'm sure he did amazing. I feel confident.
I feel good too. Anyone other than Jimmy Kimmel at this point, I think it's just nice to have someone new in the mix.
I know. But what do you think is going to win Best Picture? What's your prediction?
Ooh, actually, this is fun.
Yeah, what are some predictions?
Okay, well, I've heard that a lot of Oscars voters didn't get through The Brutalist.
Okay, yeah, of course.
They tapped out. Ooh, what do I think is Best Picture? I think it's going to be a complete upset and Timothée Chalamet is going to win Best Actor.
You think so? Yep. I think it's possible. Yep. And I think that his speech was possibly like a formal plea.
I think so too.
Of like, give it to me, I will appreciate it.
Yeah, for sure. I think, and also because Adrien Brody's won before. And yeah. the Oscars love to give it to like a newcomer yeah. as well. I think Demi Moore will win for Demi Best Actress because they are just like...
They're loving the story.
They love the story and they can't give it to Mikey Madison. She's too new.
Yeah.
But they had to throw her a bone because she did an incredible performance. I think Best Picture is going to have to be The Brutalist.
Maybe? No. Not Anora.
I don't think they... It's too radical.
It's too exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah,
if it,
probably
if
The Brutalist.
If it was Anora... It would be a Moonlight moment.
Yeah.
It would be so La La Land Moonlight where it'd be like, holy shit, what the hell? If Sean Baker got up there and accepted an Oscar, I don't know what I'll do on next week's episode. I will come, what will I do? Okay, let's do this here and now. If Anora wins in a massive upset, what will we do next week?
We will, like, I mean, there's nothing I won't do. We'll dance.
What can we do that would really put us out, embarrass us?
I mean, you could come to my pole classes. We could take a video and post it. They really encourage. But that feels like a real.
We really need to do a Danny Trejo's Donuts We Ate.
I know.
Yeah.
God, yeah. There are so many we need to. Now we're back. We're on the couch again.
I'm actually really excited to tour some more celebrity eateries.
Me too. What I've been thinking about randomly is Donald Glover's Boba Shop.
Oh, yes.
I love a bevy.
Please send this episode to a friend if you loved it.
Yeah.
We love you.
We love you. We appreciate you.
What else is on the checklist?
A little subscribe to the Patreon. A
little subscribe, never hurt anyone.
No.
I mean, we would give you a golden statue just for signing up.
Yep. I'd say so. We love you and we miss you every day.
We're not in your ears.
I know.
Goodbye.
Bye.
Uncover Girl is lovingly crafted by Beatrice Hazelhurst and Ivana Ryder. If you want to get even deeper under the covers with us, you can subscribe to our Patreon at patreon.com/uncovergirl or follow us on Instagram at uncovergirlpodcast. Rate Uncover Girl, write us a review, and share your favorite episode. Shawn Mendes, Rolling Stone 2018, anyone? And we will be your forever fans. Love you.
For a limited time at Verizon, you can get our best price ever for a single line. Just $45 per month when you bring your phone, which is less than you spend on too tired to cook takeout every week. Get one line on unlimited welcome for $45 per month with AutoPay plus taxes and fees. Visit your local Columbus Verizon store by April 2nd to save. $20 monthly promo credits applied over 36 months with a new line on unlimited welcome. In times of congestion, unlimited 5G and 4G LTE may be temporarily slower than other traffic. Domestic data roaming at 2G speeds. Additional terms apply.